Chapter 5. Rites of Passage. When Life Gets in the Way. Warning. This chapter contains spoilers for the following books. Emma by Jane Austen. The Sky is Everywhere by Jandy Nelson. Something Borrowed by Emily Giffen. The Kite Runner by Khalid Hosseini. When I was little, I used to get these dull pains in my legs at night. My parents told me they were growing pains, the result of my body, bones, and muscles changing. But what happens when the growing and changing happens in our minds? Do we also feel mental and emotional growing pains? You betcha. And that's what the rites of passage genre is all about. Death, puberty, separation, midlife crisis, adolescence. These are the roadblocks of life that stop us in our path and force us to re-examine who we are as human beings. They're also the building blocks of an incredible story that will resonate with readers because, hey, we've all been there. We've all been kicked in the butt by life at some point or other. We've all experienced some kind of life problem that required us to grow and change in order to overcome it. Rites of passage stories span centuries, cultures, races, genders, and ages. They are universal because life is universal. Life doesn't always give us what we want. In fact, it often dumps on us. It treats us unkindly, unfairly, and seemingly without respect. That's why rites of passage stories are usually tales of pain, torment, disappointment, hard knocks, and agony. Sounds uplifting, doesn't it? But actually, there's many a comedy that fits inside this genre, as well as countless harrowing and introspective dramas. After all, when life throws you a curveball, you can choose to handle it with either humor or solemnity. Whether you're writing a novel that explores death, like The Sky is Everywhere by Jandy Nelson, or The Shack by William P. Young, The Pains of Adolescence, like The Perks of Being a Wallflower by Stephen Chbosky, or The Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger, a midlife or quarter-life crisis, like Something Borrowed by Emily Giffen, or About a Boy by Nick Hornby, or even problems that span decades, like The Kite Runner by Khalid Hosseini. Your job remains the same. Tell us a tale about someone dealing with some kind of life transition. And to do that, you'll need three essential ingredients. 1, a life problem. 2, a wrong way to attack the problem. And 3, a solution to the problem that involves acceptance of the hard truth the hero has been avoiding. Let's break them down one by one. It's true that all great stories involve some kind of problem for the hero to overcome, Act 1, a wrong way to fix the problem, Act 2, and a solution that involves some kind of acceptance of the hard truth, Act 3. But what makes rites of passage stories special is the fact that the initial problem originates from simply being alive. The life problem in a rites of passage story is usually unavoidable. It's a natural bend in the road of what it means to be human. We all have to grow up, and we all encounter struggles along the way, often the exact same ones. This is why so many young adult contemporary novels fall into this genre. They explore such a tumultuous time in the human experience. In The Summer I Turned Pretty by Jenny Han, the life problem is written right into the title, adolescence. In The Truth About Forever by Sarah Dessen, the hero Macy must overcome both the loss of her father, death, and all of the other challenges being a teenager can bring, adolescence. But you don't have to be a teenager to have a little growing up to do, as evidenced in rites of passage stories like Emma by Jane Austen, in which Emma is dealing with the marriage of her beloved governess, separation, and even further in the past, the loss of her mother, death. Or Something Borrowed by Emily Giffen, in which Rachel is dealing with turning 30, quarter-life crisis. But don't forget that heroes are infamous for trying to fix things the wrong way first. And nowhere is that more true than for heroes of this genre. Which is why our second ingredient for writing a compelling rites of passage is a wrong way to attack the life problem, which usually involves some kind of avoidance of the pain. Emma, in Emma, doesn't face her life problem head on. Instead, she vows that she will never marry, and she busies herself in matchmaking for her friends. Lenny, in The Sky Is Everywhere, doesn't deal with her sister's death in a healthy way, at least not at first. Instead, she falls for two different boys, one of them her dead sister's boyfriend. And Will Freeman, in About a Boy, isn't dealing with his quarter-life crisis very well. His wrong way to attack the problem is to attend single parents' groups, even though he doesn't actually have a child, in order to pick up women. The point of the wrong way ingredient is twofold. It illustrates your hero's resistance to change and gives your story a purpose. If your hero approached their life problem with grace, humility, acceptance, and gratitude, what would be the point of the book? But in the end, all rites of passage stories are about some kind of acceptance, the genre's third ingredient. Usually, this is an acceptance of the very truth the hero has been avoiding. Jane Austen's Emma realizes that she's lonely and that the only person whose love life actually needs to be meddled with is her own. Lenny, in The Sky Is Everywhere, finally comes to accept the grief that she will have to carry for the rest of her life, instead of trying to run from it. And Rachel, in Something Borrowed, finally accepts the hard truth that it's time to move on from her childhood best friend, Darcy. These growing pains tales almost always end with the same realization. We can't expect life to change, so we'd better change instead. But the true beauty of the rites of passage story is that when your hero discovers something about themselves, we, the reader, ultimately discover a little something about ourselves too. Because regardless of age, we all have a little growing up to do. To recap, if you're thinking about writing a rites of passage novel, make sure your story includes these three essential ingredients: a life problem, a universal challenge that often results from nothing more than just being alive, such as puberty, adolescence, midlife, separation, death, and so on. A wrong way to attack the problem. Your hero can't face this challenge head on, at least not at first. There needs to be some level of avoidance happening, usually as an attempt to evade the pain. An acceptance of the hard truth. This is the real solution, and it usually comes with the understanding that it's the hero who must change, not life itself. Popular rites of passage novels through time include The Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger, Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston, The Perks of Being a Wallflower by Stephen Chbosky, The Shack by William P. Young. For a complete list, please refer to the bonus PDF that came with this audiobook. Here is the beat sheet for The Kite Runner by Khalid Hosseini. Save the cat genre, rites of passage. Book genre, general fiction. Total pages, 371. Riverhead Books paperback, 2003. This debut novel by Afghan-American author Khalid Hosseini took the literary world by storm when it was published in 2003. While the novel deals with themes of atonement and guilt, it is ultimately a coming-of-age tale, spanning from childhood to adulthood, about a son who has a very complicated relationship with his father. And it's this complicated relationship that makes the novel a shining example of a rites of passage story. 1. Opening image, pages 1 to 2. The opening image of our hero, Amir, is a bit cryptic, but it's an effective tease for the rest of the novel, as we get exactly enough to pull us into the story. After only 2 pages, we know that something happened to Amir in the winter of 1975 that changed his life forever, a hint of the catalyst to come. And we know that the memory of this life-changing event was dredged up because of a phone call from someone named Rahim Khan. Amir also tells us that it wasn't just Rahim calling. It was my past of unatoned sins. Page 1. This is a hint of the theme, courage, that will fuel the hero's transformative arc. 2. Setup. Pages 3 through 73. We flash back to Amir's childhood, growing up in Kabul, Afghanistan. The most important 2 characters of this setup, apart from Amir himself, are Hassan, his childhood best friend, and Baba, Papa in the Middle East, his father. Amir has a complicated relationship with both. His Baba is a wealthy Pashtun, Sunni Muslim, who lives in a large house with a beloved longtime family servant, Ali, a Hazara, Shia Muslim, a group that has been oppressed by Pashtuns for years. Hassan is the son of Ali. The boys grew up like brothers, but there's definitely an unbrotherly power dynamic between them. For instance, Hassan prepares meals for Amir, makes his bed, and polishes his shoes. Plus, Hassan usually takes the blame for any trouble Amir gets into, and even stands up for him in fights. But when Hassan gets picked on by the neighborhood kids for being a Hazara, Amir doesn't really do the same for him. Actually, there are times when Amir is mean to Hassan, playing harmless pranks on him. But Hassan never seems to mind. The boys are bonded because they're both motherless. Amir's mom died in childbirth, and Hassan's mother left the family shortly after he was born. It seems Baba, who is always doing good things for the community, like building orphanages, is constantly disappointed in Amir. And Amir feels guilty because he feels that he killed his mother. War comes to Afghanistan in the setup. Although it's a huge deal for the future of the country, it's a mini catalyst for Amir's story. It's not until page 73 that Amir's major catalyst appears and changes everything. Meanwhile, the kids deal with a bully named Asaf, who is constantly harassing Hassan and wants to cleanse the Hazara from Afghanistan. Hassan threatens Asaf with a slingshot and a rock, and Asaf leaves, promising retaliation. Also in this setup, we learn the source of the book's title, as Amir introduces us to the tradition of kite fighting, a winter event in which kids make and fight kites, trying to cut down the other kites in the sky. Kite runners then run after the fallen kites to collect them. Amir is an excellent kite fighter, and Hassan, his servant and best friend, is an excellent kite runner, making them a good team. The big kite fighting tournament of 1975 is here. Amir wins the tournament, and Hassan takes off after the second place kite, the greatest prize of the tournament. 3. Theme stated, page 23. As a child, Amir overhears his father talking to Rahim Khan, the man referenced in the opening image. As Baba voices his disappointment to his son, he says to Rahim, "A boy who won't stand up for himself becomes a man who can't stand up to anything." In this moment, we feel sorry for Amir, feeling that his father is very hard on him. But as the story continues, we and Amir start to realize how right his father was in this statement. One of Amir's biggest flaws is that he's a coward. He won't stand up for anything he believes in. Unlike Hassan, who constantly stands up for Amir, and unlike his father, who will risk death to defend someone's honor. 4. Catalyst, pages 73 to 79. After running after the fallen kite, Hassan goes missing, and Amir sets off to try to find him. He eventually discovers him in an alley surrounded by Asif and his gang. Amir watches unseen as Asif rapes Hassan. Instead of intervening and coming to Hassan's rescue, Amir runs away, showing his cowardly flaw. When he meets up with Hassan later, he doesn't tell him that he saw what happened. This is the event that Amir mentioned in the opening image and first chapter. The guilt and shame he feels for failing to protect Hassan will haunt him for the rest of the novel. And it's not until he learns the theme and stands up for something that he can atone for his sins, grow up, and complete his coming of age and his rite of passage. 5. Debate, pages 80 to 103. The debate question of this novel is, what will Amir do about what he saw? Or, as he puts it on page 93, what am I going to do with you, Hassan? Amir is too cowardly to tell anyone, and the guilt eats him alive. He develops insomnia. He notices differences in Hassan, who stops smiling and becomes very withdrawn. Their relationship changes drastically. They grow distant, and their friendship falls apart. Amir tries all manner of wrong ways to alleviate the guilt. First, he asks his father if they can get new servants, and his father yells at Amir for even suggesting such a thing. Then Amir tries to start a fight with Hassan, thinking it will make him feel better if Hassan fights back, but he won't. This frustrates Amir, who comes up with another wrong way to deal with his overwhelming emotions. 6. Break into 2, pages 104 to 109. Amir hides his new wristwatch and a wad of cash under Hassan's mattress, and then tells Baba that these items are missing. When they are found under Hassan's mattress, Baba asks Hassan if he stole them. Back-to-back shocks come to Amir, as Hassan admits that he did. Then, right afterward, Baba says that he forgives Hassan, even though Baba has declared that stealing is the worst of all the sins. Ali and Hassan decide to leave, despite Baba's begging them to stay. Amir almost confesses what really happened, but changes his mind, remaining a coward. This is definitely evidence of Amir fixing things the wrong way. His cowardice and the guilt that stems from it is what drives this break into two decision to try to get rid of Hassan. He believes that if he doesn't have to see him anymore, he won't feel this way. Obviously, this will turn out not to be true. 7. Fun and Games, pages 110 to 173. Act 2 of this novel takes place in a whole new world, America. The story jumps ahead 5 years. Afghanistan has become dangerous, and Amir and Baba are being smuggled to Pakistan in the back of a truck, thus beginning the steady downward path toward the midpoint. When they reach America, it's not what either of them was expecting. At first, they're forced to go on welfare, and Baba, a rich man in Afghanistan, now works at a gas station in Fremont, California. Amir graduates from high school, which pleases Baba, but Baba doesn't approve of Amir's choice to study creative writing in college. In America, Amir is still fixing things the wrong way, hoping that being this far away will help him forget his past and Hassan. On page 136, he says, "America was a river, roaring along, unmindful of the past. I could wade into this river, let my sins drown to the bottom, let the waters carry me someplace far, someplace with no ghosts, no memories, and no sins." But the memory of Hassan follows him wherever he goes, Even all the way here in America, he's still haunted by his guilt. Meanwhile, Baba's health is failing. He is diagnosed with cancer, and the outlook is not good. 8. B Story, pages 140 to 142. In America, Amir meets Soraya at a swap meet and almost instantly falls in love with her, calling her his swap meet princess, page 142. He learns that Soraya has a scandalous past, which has kept her from having any suitors. But it's actually what Amir loves about her. He loves that she too carries baggage. She too has sinned. Amir courts Soraya and they fall in love. It's Soraya who will eventually help Amir face his own past and his own sins, as any good B-story character should do. In fact, later, before they're married, Soraya comes clean about her own past, making Amir wish he had the guts to do the same. But alas, he doesn't, because he hasn't learned the theme yet. 9. Midpoint, page 173. A month after Amir and Soraya get married, Baba dies in his sleep. Not only is this a false defeat for Amir, it's also when the emotional stakes are raised big time. With Baba's death, the pressure is on for Amir to atone for his sins. Life is short. He can't die with the Hassan incident on his conscience, can he? 10. Bad Guys Close In, pages 174 to 214. Despite his father's death, Amir's life heads on a general upward path. Amir and Soraya both enroll in college, and Amir writes his first novel, gets an agent, and gets a book deal. If only it happened that fast in real life. Amir and Soraya try to have a child, but Soraya is unable to get pregnant. We fast forward 10 years. Amir gets a call from Rahim Khan. This is the phone call from the opening image. Rahim is very sick and wants Amir to come to Pakistan to see him. Before he hangs up the phone, Rahim utters a nod to the theme. Come, there is a way to be good again. Could Rahim know about the terrible things Amir did back in Afghanistan? Amir boards a flight to Pakistan. In Pakistan, Rahim tells Amir that he's dying, and before he goes, he wants to tell Amir a story about Hassan. It appears Amir's past is about to catch up with him. No more hiding. Rahim tells Amir about how he found Hassan years after Amir and Baba left Afghanistan. He was married with a child on the way. His father had died after walking into a landmine. Rahim invited Hassan and his wife to come live in Baba's old house, where Rahim was living at the time, and help him take care of it. They agreed. Hassan's wife gave birth to a boy, and they named him after a character from a book Amir used to read to Hassan. As the fighting in Kabul got worse, Hassan took good care of his son, Sohrab, teaching him how to read, write, shoot a slingshot, and run a kite, just as Hassan used to do as a kid. 11. All is Lost, pages 214 to 223. Rahim gives Amir letters from Hassan and a Polaroid of him with Sohrab. In the letters, Hassan tells Amir that he still thinks about him. Then Rahim breaks the news that Hassan and his wife were executed by the Taliban, whiff of death, leaving Sohrab alone in an orphanage in Kabul. Rahim wants Amir to go back to Kabul and get Sohrab from the orphanage. He knows of some people in Pakistan who will adopt him. On page 221, Rahim says, "I think we both know why it has to be you," revealing that Rahim knows what happened between Amir and Hassan. At first, Amir refuses. He doesn't want to get involved. Then Rahim drops the big all is lost bomb. Hassan was actually Amir's half-brother. Apparently, Ali, Hassan's father, was sterile, and Baba slept with Hassan's mother. That's why Baba always showed such favoritism to Hassan, the same favoritism that made Amir jealous of Hassan. Amir storms out of the apartment. 12, Dark Night of the Soul, pages 224 to 227. What will Amir do with this information? Will he go to Kabul and get Sarab, who is now revealed to be his nephew? Or will he be a coward, as he always has been? Back in the apartment, Rahim reminded Amir of the theme. A boy who won't stand up for himself becomes a man who can't stand up to anything. I wonder, is that what you've become? Page 221. Amir also remembers what Rahim said on the phone. There is a way to be good again. And suddenly, he knows what he must do. 13. Break into 3. Page 227. Amir agrees to go to Kabul to get Sarab. This is his chance to redeem himself. This is his chance to stand up for something. He has learned the theme. He is finally ready to grow up and stop hiding from his mistakes. 14. Finale. Pages 228 to 363. Point 1. Gathering the team. Amir travels to Kabul. On the way there, he stays the night at his driver's house and witnesses how hungry his children are. His driver, Farid, upon learning that Amir is there to rescue a Hazara boy, offers to help. Amir now has his team. Before leaving for Kabul, Amir leaves a wad of cash under the mattress for Farid's family. This redemptive action directly counteracts the break into two beat, fixing things the wrong way, where he hid cash under Hassan's mattress to get rid of him. Point 2. Executing the plan. As they drive to Kabul, Amir sees evidence of the wars that have been going on since he and Baba left. They arrive at the orphanage, and after they convince the director that they are not Taliban, the director reveals that Sarab is not there. He's been sold to a Taliban officer, for reasons that seem very dark and sinister. The director tells Amir and Farid that the Taliban officer who bought Sarab will be at the Ghazi Stadium the next day. After they leave the orphanage, Farid tells Amir that it's probably better to just forget everything that happened here in Afghanistan. It's easier. But Amir proves once again that he's learned the theme and is now fixing things the right way when he says, "I don't want to forget anymore." Page 263. The next day, they go to the stadium for a soccer match. At halftime, two adulterers are stoned to death by a Taliban cleric. Point 3. High Tower Surprise. After the match, Amir goes to see the Taliban officer. The officer brings out Sarab, and Amir is overwhelmed by his resemblance to Hassan. Amir soon figures out that the officer is actually Asif, the boy who raped Hassan. If ever there was a chance for Amir to redeem himself and his past mistakes, this is it. Point 4. Dig deep down. Asif tells Amir he can have Sarab, but he has to fight Asif first. Amir gets beaten up pretty badly in the subsequent fight, but he laughs because ironically he feels at peace for the first time since that day in 1975 when he left Hassan in the alley. My body was broken, just how badly I wouldn't find out until after, but I felt healed. Healed at last. Page 289. Amir and Sarab manage to escape Asif after Sarab shoots him in the eye with his slingshot. Point 5. The execution of the new plan. Amir recuperates from the beating in a hospital, and once he's regained consciousness, he gets a letter from Rahim, admitting that he deceived Amir. There was no family in Pakistan ready to adopt Sarab. Amir asks Sarab to come live in America with him and his wife. Sarab eventually says yes, and the two visit the American embassy, only to discover that the chances of Amir being able to adopt Sarab and bring him back to America are slim. Upon hearing this news and knowing that he'll most likely land back in an orphanage, Sarab attempts to commit suicide. As Amir waits for news of Sarab's condition in the hospital, he prays for the first time in over 15 years. After Sarab wakes up, Amir tells him that his wife has worked everything out with an American immigration lawyer and they can adopt him. Sarab is different now, though. He doesn't speak. He's sort of dead inside. Amir brings Sarab to California, and his arc is completed when Saraya's father insults Sarab by calling him a Hazara boy. To which Amir stands up for himself and his nephew and says, "You will never again refer to him as Hazara boy in my presence. He has a name, and it's Sarab." Page 361. Time passes, and Sarab still doesn't speak. He just sleeps and remains silent. 15. Final image, pages 318 to 323. One afternoon, Amir takes Saraya and Sarab to a park and sees people flying kites. He buys a kite for Sarab and tells him that his father was the best kite runner in all of Kabul. He shows Sarab how to fly the kite, and they cut another kite's string. Amir offers to run the kite for Sarab. Sarab smiles for the first time since arriving in America, and Amir takes off after the fallen kite, redeeming himself once and for all and becoming the kite runner. Why is this a rites of passage? The Kite Runner contains all three elements of a successful rites of passage story. A life problem. Although this novel spans decades, it's essentially a coming-of-age story. Amir struggles with becoming an adult and dealing with the mistakes of his childhood. He also struggles with feeling unloved and underappreciated by his father, which leads to his life's biggest regret. A wrong way to attack the problem. By trying to kick Hassan out of the house, Amir begins a sequence of wrong-way solutions. Until he returns home and learns the truth about Hassan, his strategy is consistently avoidance and diversion. An acceptance of the hard truth. Amir accepts the hard truth about his real relationship with Hassan when he agrees to go find Hassan's son and bring him back to Pakistan. And then even more so when he decides to bring him home to America. If you'd like to read an abbreviated version of this beat sheet, check out the Cat's Eye View for The Kite Runner, which can be found in the bonus PDF.